What's up, y'all? Welcome back to another Beyond the Numbers podcast. As always, I am one of your hosts, Will, and this is Ben.
Yes, sir.
Today, we're going to get into everything that you love about sports, everything that I love about sports, everything that Ben loves about sports, and everything in between. So let's get into it.
Yes, sir.
Starting off with the MLB, Shohei Ohtani, sir. Are you kidding me? Three home runs, 10 Ks. The man went absolute bananas. And let's be clear, out of those 10 Ks, Shohei Ohtani had a no-hitter going into the seventh inning. William Contreras broke up that no-hitter. Other than that, that man was on his way to having the best game. Matter of fact, he already has the best game ever by a baseball player, period. But he was on his way to having the best game that nobody could ever touch again.
I don't even know what to say about Ohtani. You know, you got the Dodgers, and then you got Shohei. That man is like, I legitimately believe that he is one of the best players to ever play the game. I don't know that there's too many people that would argue that, but at the same time, I think it's kind of funny that we're having this particular matchup for the World Series between Toronto and LA. Primarily because back, if you didn't remember this, back in December of 2023, there were some folks that seemed to think that Shohei was going to go to Toronto and sign with the Blue Jays. Of course, that did not happen, but I think it's a bit of a funny little twist of fate for this matchup, and the man is just a machine.
I don't understand why people don't walk him. He would never have an at bat with me. I can't. No. You think I'm about to let you know one of those homers went for 486, I think, or 496?
It was a very, very long, it almost went out of the park, right?
Yes. Beyond out of the park. It almost went c completely to another realm. That's how hard he hit that ball, sir. There's not one excuse for it. I can't see it.
I just, it never fails to amaze me the level of like calmness that he has as a leadoff hitter. He never seems typically to be uncomfortable. He's always composed, it seems like, even in a rough game. And it's almost like at this point you sit there and you're like, okay, what's the odds of this one being a home run? Starting off the game, what's the odds of a home run? In like almost any other leadoff hitter for any team, or even if the Dodgers really were to put somebody else in leadoff, I wouldn't count on it. But with Shohei is all about the show. He is just a classy, like calm, collected monster. Like, you know, he comes up there, you look at him, you're like, oh man, he looks harmless. Like he's not gonna do nothing, right? And then the pitcher,
Baby face and
knowing,
all.
yeah, he looks like a child. He looks like he's playing high school. And then he turns around and just scarily calm, crack. And it isn't always a home run, but it feels like every time I'm watching a game, that's when he does it. So, admittedly, watching the Dodgers is it's more like, for me, it's like watching what Shohei's gonna do. But don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking the rest of the team.
I was about to say, please don't do that because when Shohei doesn't show up for the night, because there's been some nights where he hasn't, don't let the 60 home runs that he has this year fool you. There's been some nights where Shohei's gone 0 for 5.
He has.
He gets
I wouldn't
uncomfortable
say.
up there. He definitely gets has a couple of problems here and there, but when he has those days, you can't tell because the rest of the team shows out for him. It's the Dodgers are a complete team, sir. That's the thing about him. That's what people aren't going to be able to beat. That complete team, that all around hitting squad.
Right.
And then when their pitching is on point, when their pitching coach is actually doing his job, because there's a whole lot of times where he doesn't. And those are the games that we've let up at the last minute. When they're on point, nobody's beating the Dodgers, sir. They're too stacked up. They're too good. They hit the ball too well. It's all around bad for whoever's playing against them when they're all on point. Shohei's just another part of that recipe.
He really is.
He's the one that everybody's fearing, but Freddie Freeman can just as easily go off with 3 home runs. If I'm not mistaken, he did it in the World Series last year.
All I'm going to say is the Dodgers are one of those teams that you can have 1, 2, even 3 guys having a rough night. And while it may not be quite the electrifying outcome you would expect, you can still expect their percentage, their odds of winning is high. They're not a team that, you know, when they're able to, sometimes I think they get in their own head a little bit. Honestly, when they're out there playing, you can tell, like, the games when they're off and they're just as a team, they're not there, and they have those losses. It's like they're in their head. So when they're not in their head and when they're there to get the win, and they're, even if 1 or 2 or again 3 players, whatever, is down, as long as everyone else is clicking, they're almost unstoppable. So that's going to be the biggest thing for the Blue Jays this year, is being able to honestly overcome the Dodgers, even if half of their roster is struggling, the other half can pick up the slack. The Blue Jays barely made it in here. It took them to 7 games, and that's, you know, they're getting Bo Bichette back, and that's going to be another huge addition back to their lineup. It's going to be one of the things that could help them with their hitting. Their lineup just got a little bit better again. But I just, like you said, I it's something that's going to be hard for teams like to overcome that, just the way that the Dodgers as a team are so well-rounded. And even though I think that Toronto has got a good team, I don't think that I necessarily would put them on the same level as the Dodgers.
I'm going to be honest, I'd have been way more comfortable with the Dodgers taking this World Series if it wasn't the Blue Jays, if the Mariners would have took that series. But the Mariners aren't as good as the Blue Jays, and they kind of proved that in that last series. The Mariners were up 2-0. There's not one reason that series went to 7.
They slacked. That's what happened.
That's exactly what happened. They slacked off thinking that they were good. Kyle Riley, even though he had those 2 homers to keep these games alive, Kyle Riley started slacking. Polanco started slacking. I don't know what it was. Maybe they just thought they were comfortable and sitting pretty. But as soon as they slacked off, the Blue Jays capitalized. And then you got George Springer with the game-winning homer. Sir, that whole crowd erupted. I erupted. When I saw that, I was sitting here like, bro, no, they did not just pull this off in the 7th inning. That's insanity, sir. And the Blue Jays have, I'm going to say, even though the Dodgers are my team, and you know I got them winning, Dodgers in 5 regardless.
Well, I want to point something out. history is kind of on the Blue Jays' side here. And this is something just kind of it doesn't mean a lot, okay? But like at the same time, it's still kind of a fun fact. This is the 5th time since the conference, you know, the conference round, that 3rd round became the best of 7, which, mind you, was back in 1985. So while that seems like forever ago in baseball history, that is not that long ago. One of the conferences had a sweep, and then the other one went 7 games. So in the previous 4 times that this has happened since 1985, okay, the team that played the seven-game series each time went on to win the World Series. So the four times that this exact scenario has occurred, this being the fifth, all four, in theory, if this was the same matchup every time, all four would have went to the Blue Jays. So
okay, history, you're right. You're right. That stat does not matter at all. But it doesn't. The Dodgers are not any of those teams at any given time. The Dodgers are literally the most well put together team in the league when they're all healthy and playing on the same page.
Facts. That's going to be this is the thing though. Repeating is hard no matter what sport it is. Baseball, probably not as much. If you make it to that point, then it's not as hard to repeat as maybe it is in some other competitive sports. But the one thing I will say is the Blue Jays do have some really, really good hitters. I don't think this is a game, and I mean, in the end of the day, the playoffs speak for themselves. The Blue Jays are here and the Yankees aren't. But the Yankees, yes, they had some good hitters last year, but this isn't the Yankees. These are guys that honestly I feel like they're the underdog. Like, if you think about it, it's almost like a David and Goliath type of situation right here. You got the Blue Jays who are going up against insurmountable odds. And I always think that underdogs are the ones to really watch for because you kind of know what you're going to get with the Dodgers. And you're talking about a Blue Jays team that surprised everybody. Like, I don't think there was a single person who would have called this at the beginning of the year. Or even within the first 20 to 30 games would have even thought about saying, oh, the Blue Jays are going to be it. Maybe even going up until the All-Star break, I still don't know that people would have necessarily been saying, at least too many, the Blue Jays are going to the World Series. I think more people would have picked the Mariners at that point in the season than the Blue Jays. And they've done something. But it's going to come down to if really at the end of the day, if they can find a way to break past the pitching for the Dodgers. I think they are capable of going hit for hit. I think they're very capable. I think they're able to do that, but it's going to require them getting past the pitching. I think they're going to be capable of holding the Dodgers a little bit, but are they going to be able to do something with that? That is going to be the issue. The competition that the Dodgers have faced coming up to this point, not been that good. As much as I hate to say it, the Reds offered them no resistance ever, except for like one inning here and there, and by then it was still too late. The Phillies, unfortunately, not enough. The Brewers, they got swept. I don't even need to say anything else. So this will be the
Brewers
first.
Brewers put up more of a fight, though.
They tried, but they got swept.
Up more of a fight in those sweeps, though.
Those
games could have gone either way. All of them could have went either way. And the Dodgers just ended up pulling them out. The Reds were never going to be a competition, of course. And I'm not sorry to say that. And the who was the other team?
The Phillies.
The fact that I forgot them rests my case. They were never a factor. They just weren't a factor. I've been saying that all year, and nobody really heard me. But Bryce Harper dropped off the face of the earth mid-season, and nobody paid attention. And then you got Kyle Schwarber. Yes, he was showing out. Kyle Schwarber's an absolute dog, but he's one player on a team filled with good hitters, by the way. I'm not saying that none of them are trash. They just play trash ball all season long. They were never supposed to be in the playoffs, in my opinion. But when they made it, I knew they weren't going to beat the Dodgers. And then when we come down to the Mariners had all the potential to beat the Dodgers. Their pitching wasn't up to snuff, though. if you're getting hit around by teams like the Blue Jays and who was the Mariners opponent before that?
Oh, they played Detroit. They almost dropped that. They went 3-2 on them.
Once again, if you're getting hit around by teams like Detroit and the Blue Jays, you're definitely going to get hit around by the Dodgers. It happens like that. It's just they didn't have a recourse. There's no recourse to stop the Dodgers. The only thing that's going to stop the Dodgers is the Dodgers at this point. The Dodgers have to show up and show out. Now, once again, the Blue Jays make me just a tad bit uncomfortable because they're real motivated and they got some real good hitters behind them to keep them close with us. But once again, that pitching, yeah, they got Gausman. When Gausman's at the helm, they don't have, nobody stands a chance. But who else? Shane Bieber doesn't have a chance. They're going to smack that boy. So when we're thinking about who's going to take this World Series, yeah, it's going back-to-back is historically hard. This should be a walkthrough for the Dodgers, literally a walkthrough playoff run, because they haven't had to actually show up and show out. And I think the Blue Jays are going to make them do that.
I definitely agree with you there. I don't know that it's going to be enough, but I'm rooting for the Blue Jays. I'm not going to sit here and say otherwise. It's kind of boring to root for a repeat champion. I don't find any excitement in it, especially since I'm a Reds fan. I have no real reason to root for them. It's been a long time. It's been since the Blue Jays have won themselves a series. I'm here for it. I'm down for it. I want to see the Blue Jays take this one. For no other reason than just because I want the Dodgers to lose. I don't want to see a repeat. It's boring. Move on. And let's be honest, the Dodgers have their fair share of titles the last several years. So
I don't care. First off, it's my team, so we're not going to root for your team. But let's be clear. I kind of want to root for the Blue Jays, too. The Blue Jays put on a phenomenal game. A phenomenal season, honestly. They completely deserve their playoff run. Just like I'm saying that the Dodgers did, the Blue Jays deserve to be here too. So, you know, I'm not going to be mad if the Blue Jays take this one. The Dodgers are still the better team. We all know it. But taking the World Series, it could really come down to who's going to be doing what at what time. The Dodgers, just like they did midseason, they could have a whole slump point and go down 3-0 in this. That it could just as easily happen. Because the Blue Jays are fired up and they are ready to go. They are ready for what's coming next.
Can't really blame them, honestly. It's time for them to show up and show out if they want to do something. And, you know, the Dodgers have less to prove. The Dodgers at this point, they've got two titles in, what, the last 5 years? So it's not like this would be anything too crazy. You know, it'd just be another one. So for the Blue Jays, however, yeah. Now the Dodgers' biggest upside for this is, again, they would be the first team to repeat since the Yankees back in 99 and 2000. So there is a little something to be said for that. But at the end of the day, the Dodgers have less to prove. A loss here isn't the end of the world. Hey, they went right back to where they were last year. Maybe they drop it in a tight, you know, take it to 7 and it is what it is. Maybe that's what happens. Who knows? But at the end of the day, I personally just feel like I want the Blue Jays to pull this out. I want to root for the underdog because at the end of the day, that's what they are. Yes, they have some really good guys, Vlad, Bo, I mean, Springer. Like, you know, they got some guys that can put, as you say, bat to ball. And they can get it done. So they, again, against the Mariners, they showed that they are more than capable of scoring. However, like you mentioned, one of their biggest flaws is their pitching. And unfortunately, Dodgers are not a team that you want to have that problem against, especially in the World Series where the only thing left is the next game until it's over. There's no more, oh, this is over, on to the next round. No. This is it. It's for all the marbles this year.
That's what I'm saying. There's no recourse for your pitching, and there's no backtracking how bad it is compared to the Dodgers hitting. Against another team, yeah, your pitching would suffice. You give up bad pitches to the Dodgers, anybody on the lineup, it could go yard. Let alone it going into play and you letting up big runs. Like, it happens. It happens all the time. The only way that you beat the Dodgers is if you pitch lights out ball. And it you can do it. Teams have done it this year. But I don't think the Blue Jays are going to be able to hold off seven games on it. Just me personally. Well,
the question for you then is, if the Dodgers take it this year and become back-to-back champs, do they do it again next year and go for the three-peat?
I'm not going to speak on next year.
Oh.
Why would I not speak on next year? Now, as a fan, I'll say, of course. Why wouldn't we? But as the professional that I am, I'm going to say I'm going to hold off judgment until I see what the Dodgers look like next year.
Yeah.
Because it's just a smart play. Somebody better, but, you know, there could not be.
Well, at some point, all the money that they have is going to come back to – that they've been spending is going to come back to bite them. At some point, it does to every team. Every team eventually has its downfall. And admittedly, the Dodgers have been pumping money into their roster. And I'm not saying that they're buying their victories, but I am saying that they have spent an exorbitant amount of money to ensure that they have created the best roster to give them the best run, the best era that they can get right now. And admittedly – it's done its job. That money has been well spent. Again, shout out to the Dodgers. No knocking that. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think they have several more good years in them, regardless of winning World Series or not. I think they'll be a competitive team for many years. It's going to come down to that case to how long that money will hold its value before it becomes an issue and they can't afford to quite have that same, you know, effect in the next.
Let's be clear. They didn't already made the money back that they spent on Shohei, or that they will be spending on Shohei. Now, of course, we don't know exact details of his contract, but we know $700 million over 10 years. The Dodgers have got $700 million plus more within the last 2 years.
Well, let's be clear, though. Your cost of your roster, it isn't just in Shohei. They have an expensive roster.
No, I'm saying they didn't already. If they've made that plus more, I'm sure that they've been making money. Freddie, Mookie, I mean, that stuff sells itself.
Well, here's the thing. Not all of that money necessarily is, like, all going to go back to
what they can.
So there's limits. I mean, that's why we have caps and stuff. So, like, obviously, it's like the NFL. Like, we hear about players talking about wanting to be the highest paid in their positions, and we have guys getting $100-200 million-plus contracts, right? The owners of these teams, some of them are so wealthy that if they were allowed to just put all their money into it, they could just buy the team. But we have caps for a reason, to prevent creating just an exorbitantly, ridiculously strong dynasty for, you know, decades. So I think that the money will eventually become an issue for the Dodgers. I'm not saying that it'll happen soon. It probably would be another 5, 6, 7 years down the road. But eventually you're going to run into the issue of how many times can you pay these players big money, all of your players big money, and afford to keep that roster intact. Of course, the other thing to consider is it isn't just about the money. These are talented individuals. It's not like you're going to be able to get that many talented individuals on one team very often. One of the things that happens in sports is if you get all these guys with talent together, it's like what we see in the NBA a lot with these dynasty style power three, power four teams. They start to kind of butt heads on who's going to be that guy. However, for the Dodgers, it seems like for now they don't have that problem. So, yeah.
I digress. My whole point was that the Dodgers are rich. That was really all I was saying about it. But if we're going to move on, I think this is a great point to do so.
Agreed.
Because I think we can talk about this a little bit too long. We're going to talk a little bit about the NBA.
Oh, yeah.
Right now it's 40-39. Let's talk about the Thunder. Right now, Chet Holmgren is playing probably the best game that he's going to have all season. I believe he is now, because he just hit a three. He is now at 18 points, seven for seven. Oh, that three-pointer, they counted it as a two. His toe must have been on the line. But he is now 7 for 7 with 18 points.
Oh, yeah. He's going nuts.
4 for 4 on free throws. He's actually going stupid on them. I don't know what the Rockets are doing, but they're winning. So, well, but none of them are actually showing out. Like, they're actually playing clumsy ball.
Well, I mean, when it's game one, you know, yeah, I mean, obviously we had the preseason, right? But at the end of the day, it is what it is. When it's game one, you know, you might have to come in a little, you got to come in and impress, but like, you know, you're going up against the champs. You know, it's a long season. It's get settled in, you know, see how things go. Thompson and Durant both are doing pretty good right now. I mean, it's game one. Well, I mean, you can't expect a lot whenever you're the team going up against the champs. So if your defense is doing the job that it needs to do and your offense is doing the job that it needs to do, hey, I don't care if it's sloppy or not. If you can get the win, you just set a tone for your team.
Chet Holmgren is a monster.
And he doesn't look like he would be.
I think he is. I've always thought he was. Last year, before he got injured, Chet Holmgren was golden for my overs. If I would have put a parlay in tonight, I would have banged at least 100 on him.
Dude, he looks like the guy that gets thrown in the trash by bullies. I'm just saying.
But he doesn't get bullied down there though. Mm-mm. He gets it done.
And he does so without any hesitation. He is, last year, one of the things I liked about him was he was so, like, he puts his body on the line. Like, he doesn't mind, like, not holding back. He will take and make the hard plays in up against some brutal, brutal defense. And he's the same on defense. He's a dog on defense. That man doesn't care if it's painful, if he has to get up there in the paint and do a little bit of collision, you know, defense, he'll do it. He doesn't care. And he does it with almost like zero thought of what could happen to him. And that I can appreciate. We don't have enough players who do that anymore.
Right now, Kevin Durant sits at 8 points. Way slower start than I thought. But I think he'll still end out the night with a good dub. He's not.
He's a good player. Right now,
he's not really playing crazy basketball right now. But I think he's just getting ready for the getting used to the team. You can tell he's really filling out a whole lot of stuff. I didn't see him talking to Sengun a few times. They're working out game plans and whatnot. Like I said, they're winning, so it's not like the points actually matter altogether. But boy, oh boy, Steve Adams. If I see him miss another 2-point layup, I'm gonna scream.
I'm just saying that The Rock, or not the Rock, I'm sorry, the Thunder, they looking a little rough in the paint right now. And it's not even like it's been a defense. Like, and the Rockets have too. The Rockets have been missing some easy layups, I feel like. But like when you look at a team like the Thunder last year, they dominated in every aspect of the game for the most part. To see them struggling like they are right now in both, you know, offense and defense, especially with the rebounding, like it's not a good sign. But again, it's game one. So like you gotta get a lot of this stuff figured out. But the Rockets are just playing mean. They got the dog in them. They know that they have a lot to prove. And I like it. I like the score. It's close. It's not something that's very lopsided. Clearly, both teams can go back and forth and exchange leads. And it's just game one. That's what it boils down to, I think, is game one.
I believe that the Thunder altogether have the perfect team to repeat, I believe. But that is not to say that they will, because there's I think this might be Stephen Curry's year to get his last ring before he bows out. Okay. This, I think tonight's game against the Lakers is going to tell a lot. Him and Luka Doncic. I like it. But as for the Rockets, I'm not liking anything that I'm seeing so far. And as for the Thunder, the only person that I've seen so far while watching this game that I don't like is Hartenstein. I don't know what that man's out there doing. He's throwing air balls. He's done missed two layups, like easy layups, return layups. It's I don't know. The only person that's actually balling out, that coming off the bench, is Mitchell. He's doing amazing. I don't know. His jump shot's ugly, but
Wiggins hasn't been doing too bad either. I mean, he's only put up five, but I mean, he's done pretty good with the time he's been in there.
I mean, Wiggins is going to do what Wiggins does. I don't like talking about Andrew Wiggins. He's a real stickler for me, because he will ruin a parlay. You understand me? If you take his under, he's going to go over. If you take his over, he's going to go under. You can't really call it. So for Wiggins, I think I had him one game for like over 12 points, and that man dropped 10.
Okay.
And struggled for that 10. Like, I'm over with.
I found that messing with anybody on the bench tends to cost me money. So, now, it depends.
Only on person off the bench that doesn't cost you money is Peyton Pritchard. You could put that man for 53s, and he's going to grab them. That's all that man. At one game, that's all that man did. I swear, he came out every time he came off the bench, there wasn't one shot that he didn't throw up that wasn't a three. He was at the line. At one point, he was just posted at the line waiting for it. I don't know. He's just built for the three ball.
The Thunder are struggling with fouls. Timo Cruz. The Thunder are struggling with fouls. They have four already. The Rockets have one. So, in regards to that, I think that's another telling tale. Now, granted, that's a close game, and while fouls kind of are, they are what they are in the NBA.
These refs are being kind of sensitive too, though.
Well, I think that was one of the things that they were talking about last year, was how the refs were, it was going to be different. Good grief, the Rockets cannot score. They get offensive rebounds and they still can't produce points. It's one of the ugliest offensive performances I've seen in a minute.
Like I said, they're playing sloppily out there. I think the Thunder just aren't playing up to their full potential right now. And it's saving.
Here's what I'm seeing. The Rockets are playing phenomenal until it comes time to score. They're making all these moves, but then they don't do nothing with it. Like, the way they're playing, the Rockets almost like they have no answer for them. And so, I don't know. Anyway, I don't know.
The Rockets are still up. So we can't really say too much about it because however sloppy it is, the Thunder are playing sloppier. Shea's out here laughing and smiling like everything's a joke. You're losing, sir. I don't like it. But neither here.
I don't think they're repeating this year, but anyway, I digress on that before I get started. I don't know about you, sir. Normally we talk a lot about football to start off with, and then if we have time, we diverge into the on down the path of baseball or whatever it may be. There are things coming. We got hockey to talk about, but that's one of those sports that I feel like we wait until a little bit of time has passed. We got college basketball around the corner. We talk about the NFL a lot. We got college football that we don't really delve into too much, and I think here soon I would like to. But for tonight, to bring us to the end of this episode, or at least lead us down that path, I would like to go back to our bread and butter that we've been on for a while, and that is the NFL. And I would like recap Monday night.
Monday night, okay. Well, let me go ahead and break it down for you in simple terms, and then we can give it the whole heave-ho, okay?
Okay.
First game, the Buccaneers and the Lions, there's really nothing to it. Like, I know we can give it a nice little explanation as to what happened, but the Lions played bully ball and it was effective. It's what they've been doing. That's what they did last year, the year before that, and that's what they've been doing this year. They played bully ball and then ran it up somebody's throat. There goes the summary for you. There's nothing else to it. Baker Mayfield could have done way better if it wasn't against the Lions, but it was. So, neither here nor there. And then we come down here to the Texans and the Seahawks. The Seahawks did what they were supposed to do.
Yep.
It was a close game. It wasn't like the Texans got blown out, but it also came down to who was supposed to win, because who had the better team? The Seahawks. So if there goes your summaries, let's get into it.
All right. So the first thing I want to talk about when it comes to the Lions and the Bucks is this was one of those weird, very out of the ordinary, uncharacteristically poor performances from Baker Mayfield. However, not so crazy is the fact that also Jared Goff, they both were very similar. I want to put these stats off. I'll go with Baker first. All right. Baker threw the ball a lot. I'll just put it out to you this way. This is the one thing that him and Goff were different on. They did not run that ball because the Lions defense is mean. So 28 of 50, that's what Baker Mayfield was, just a little over 50%. 28 of 50. He threw one touchdown, one interception, and got sacked four times. Now, let me do this. Jared Goff was 20 of 29, 241 yards, which puts him just shy of 70%, with one touchdown, one interception, and sacked four times. It isn't the quarterback problem here. The dilemma, the Lions, let's just say 32 as a team, 32 rush attempts, 164 yards, two touchdowns. The Buccaneers as a team ran 12 times for 41 yards with, of course, zero touchdowns. The problem here is one team, mind you, both defenses equally pressured Jared Goff and Baker Mayfield enough to where each got four sacks. So let's start there, one interception each. The rushing difference is night and day. Without Bucky Irving, the Buccaneers are in serious trouble against good defense. The Lions had Jahmyr Gibbs, who had a really good game, 17 for 136 yards and two touchdowns.
Really good is an understatement, sir.
That
is the understatement of the year. That man went
bananas. Well, no, it's not necessarily an understatement because Jonathan Taylor was better. But Jahmyr Gibbs, 1736.
We're not even – you're talking about –
Cowboys, I'm just saying there are better performances that did occur in this week. But
did he not snap though?
He did.
Two touchdowns, 78 yard touchdown, mind you.
I'm not disagreeing. The okay. point though is David Montgomery, 13 for 21. I'm just saying they need to figure out a way to use him better because they've kind of backed off, and I think that was what made them so dangerous earlier on. Granted, Gibbs doing the thing, but man, they got to figure out how to get Montgomery going again because that man's a touchdown machine. Jared Goff ran twice for 7 yards. I don't really care. But that 7 yards and two of those rushes that they didn't have if he wouldn't have. So the difference here that's night and day, because it's clearly not the quarterbacks, it's clearly not the receivers, is the running back situation. The defenses both were very similar. They did their jobs. At the end of the day, though, Baker can't do it all, and you don't have a running game because, let me be clear, White is not the guy. Rashad White cannot do what Bucky Irving can do. Now, if you put the two of them out there together, they might have a little something-something, but Bucky Irving is clearly being missed.
He's more of a receiving running back than a...
Indeed. So this is a problem that the Bucks need to fix quickly. They're 5-2, not to sweat, not to worry about. Hey, you lost to the Lions. You guys are beat up. The Lions are not beat up. It's okay. That's completely opposite conference. It's
once fine. Again, like I said, there's not really nothing to say against the Bucks because the Lions could have done this to anybody.
They could have.
They play bully ball, bro, and teams have a very hard time playing up against them. So when I'm saying that there's nothing to it, yes, there's some stuff that the Bucks need to fix. But altogether, this performance doesn't define the Buccaneers' performance this year.
It does. Why? It does define. There is one thing it does define. It does define that they are not a good team, or not a well-rounded team without a solid, true running back against good competition. So, my concern, if I were the Bucks right now, because 5-2 is a good spot to be. It's going into Week 8. It absolutely is a phenomenal place to be. But there is a serious problem that offensive line needs to get better, that needs to give Baker more time, but they also need to get help behind him. If Bucky goes down, there should be somebody who can pick up some of that weight and not have to abandon the run game, because that's what they did. They got down early, couldn't get a running back. Let's be clear. If it was the other way around and it was the Lions would have just kept running. The Eagles do it with Saquon and Jalen all the time. The Colts run with Jonathan Taylor. Now, granted, they haven't really spent much time behind this year, but they'll run with Jonathan Taylor. The Ravens will continue to run with Derek and Lamar until there's no other option but to airmail it, and then they see what happens. The Cowboys continue to run with Javonte Williams until there's no other option, and it works. You go down, though, you have a backup in place ready to go. The Lions have two, you know, and they need to find somebody who can replace Bucky, because I'm sorry, Rashad White is not that guy, you know, and a lot of teams that do not have that are a problem. The Panthers are a prime example of a team that actually had a serviceable backup. Admittedly, I don't think a lot of people believe they did, but Rico Dowdle was clearly not just serviceable, but really probably the better of the two. Chuba Hubbard was supposed to be that guy.
We're not doing that to Chuba. Don't do that.
Chuba's done okay, but Rico, in his time since he started, I'm sorry, Chuba went out on the injury, so I'm not knocking him, but at the same time, I'm running that as a duo in that backfield. I'm running them together. I'm letting them split them that workload, and I'm finding out who's going to get the work in, because just like with the Lions, you see how effective that can be. Now, granted, against the Bucks, it Jameer was the only one that was successful. Montgomery, David kind of struggling. So, while I understand what you're saying, I do think there is some concern there. I wouldn't say it's time for the Buccaneers to be worried by any stretch, but they do have some things they need to fix in a game like this against stiff competition. They struggled against the Texans, sir. This is the Lions, who are competitive and win games. How do you expect to push yourself as a team into the playoffs and having one of the better records in the league when you know you're getting ready to drop games against defenses? So you can't, you got to get your receivers out there. They got to stay healthy. You got to get your protection. You got to get Cade Otton involved in the game more. And you got to get some running help. Make a trade. Send freaking Mike Evans out. You don't need him. Get rid of Chris Godwin. Get rid of somebody. You got Igbuka out there going crazy. Keep him. Send away one of your veterans to a team who needs a receiver but has a running back. You know what I'm saying? Like, DeAndre Swift has found himself a place in Chicago. Why not? I mean, make a trade for somebody. You know, you never know what you're going to get unless you try. Give Bucky a solid partner out there. Teams that have running back duos are finding it successful. Bijan and Tyler in Atlanta, when Bijan first came in, that year when he was a rookie, they split the workload and both of them were finding the end zone back and forth. When Achane came in, it was what? Raheem Mostert and who was the other running back y'all had, or was it just him and Achane? Splitting the workload.
It was Achane.
So, again, proven point. Split workload, healthier, more energetic, safer really in the long run, and more successful. Tampa's two key pieces short, a healthy offensive line and a good running back to go and partner with Bucky. That's all I've got on that and why I think that that is important. But outside of that, I digress.
I just say that all in all, you're right. They definitely need to get Cade Otton involved more. There's no reason why he has no touchdowns on this year. Rashad White, receiving running back. Once again, Bucky Irvin, him be a problem back there. So, not to repeat everything that you just said, but yes, I agree. Moving on to the last game before we get up out of here, man.
Yeah, speaking of running back duos, Charbonnet and Walker.
They were again, a problem. They were a problem.
Touchdowns for Charbonnet, but Walker was still had more yards. He had more touches, more yards. Charbonnet comes in, gets the touchdowns. Again, quarterbacks, so similar, it's not even funny. The losing team, the losing quarterback, threw the ball more. 23 of 49 for 229. Less than 50% completion. One touchdown, one interception, three sacks. You can't make this up. Sam Darnold, 17 of 31, 213 yards, just a little under 55%. One touchdown, one interception, two sacks. Cooper Kupp had a throw in there that was an interception. I don't understand it. I don't know. I don't even want to talk about it. But that was a game that the Seahawks were supposed to win. They did their job. Both quarterbacks sucked. Both quarterbacks have nothing to be proud of in this game. Although if I were to pick which quarterback performed better, it would clearly be Sam Darnold. I mean, he threw for a few less yards, but his completion percentage was relatively better. The running game. What did the Texans' running game do? They ran 17 times as a team for 56 yards. And to be clear, sir, C.J. Stroud had more yards. He had almost as many yards as Marks and Chubb did together. Chubb ran 5 times, 16 yards. Marks ran 10 times for 15. Again, you've got to have a well-rounded team. It can't be just your quarterback throwing the ball. And don't get me wrong, Houston's receiving core did pretty well for the most part. Schultz had a couple of good catches. 9 for 98 is not bad. Noel had 4 for 77. I mean, Nico Collins kind of fell back bad because he got targeted 10 times but only got the ball 4. That was a huge problem. So I will say that they do need the receivers, their best receiver, to catch the ball when it's thrown to him. But regardless, you can go down this whole entire list. You realize Houston had 2 forced fumbles against the Seahawks. They did not fumble once. They had 2 interceptions. One of which was Cooper Kupp, so I don't really fully count that one. It is an interception regardless, but those plays do tend to be a little funky. They lost this game because their quarterback did what he could, but you can only do so much. And as the season evolves, you see teams like this continue to fall further behind, which is why I said what I said about Tampa. They don't need to be concerned yet, but they need to be worried about what could happen if they don't get that figured out. O-line, protect Baker, give Bucky some better running lanes, and give Bucky somebody back there, whether it's a receiver that can do like Deebo Samuel did with the Niners for a long time and run some plays like he did. I mean, he ran the ball quite a bit with San Francisco. Give Bucky that. Get Ekbuka out there and let him do what he does. See if he can make some runs happen. I don't care. Give somebody the ball that isn't just going to be one-dimensional. Okay, Bucky's going to get the ball or Baker's going to pass. You know, have two running backs. Get a fullback involved. Do something. But don't keep it consistently the same player. You'll run him into the ground and you'll do have what happened to Irving this year. He's hurt. He's got to get back in the game, but it's going to make him slower. It is what it is, but that's my feelings on it.
With that being said, you guys, we got to wrap this up. We love talking to you. This is Beyond the Numbers. Make sure to check us out on social media, on all your platforms. We love to hear from you all. Let us know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, anything in between. Anything else you got, Ben?
No, sir. I think that'll cover it. It's been fun.
It's been fun. It's been real. It's been real fun. Peace.